This is Metal Mike, and in this one, we explore the 90s, the dark era for the 80s metal bands. Me and my buds do a top 7 from CMC Records. Check it out.
Well, Nick and Ryan, welcome to the 80s Glam Metalcast, guys. How you doing?
Thank you for having us. Appreciate it.
Yeah, doing great. Thank you.
Awesome. Well, Ryan, everybody knows you, man. You're on all the time. But Nick, you're fresh to the podcast. You got a cool Instagram account called Nick's Tunes. Tell everybody about that account. What do you showcase on there?
So I showcase a little bit of everything. I go through, it's mainly metal of all varieties. A little bit of 80s metal, a little bit of kind of going through a death metal phase, like the Florida, the classic stuff. Going through a little bit of that right now. So it just kind of goes, just whatever I'm feeling, and that's kind of what I'm posting. But it's primarily metal.
Nice. Yeah, I enjoy your account, and really, I'll be honest with you, you gave me the idea for this episode because you post a lot of those 90s metal albums from CMC Records, and you know, for some of us, at least the way I look at it, CMC is kind of like a dark history of 80s metal, you know what I mean? The dark era, the dark ages. A lot of bands lost their major label status, and this was a label where they found a home. Well, Ryan, what do you think about what I just said?
Yeah, oh, dude. Well, you guys brought this to my attention. I was just kind of innocently going through it. I'll tell you what, CMC, to me, they never really fired on all cylinders. Usually there was something that was missing. It was either the tracks, the actual material, the artwork. Something was always just almost there. So there's really only one album on here that I really love all the way through. But yeah, you guys brought this to my attention pretty much.
Nick, what did you think about some of these releases? You agree with Ryan that like they're just a little bit shoddy? They're just missing something?
Yeah, actually, that's a perfect way to describe it. So I'll never forget when I actually first heard about CMC International. I was at Ozfest in 1996, I think, and I'm sitting out on the lawn, and I'm reading through the program, through the Ozfest program, and I turn the page and I see this big ad. It has Slaughter, Warrant, Lynyrd Skynyrd, Styx. I'm like, what is this? I hadn't even heard about a lot of this at the time. I was kind of going more into the heavier side of metal at that point, and so I kind of started going back, and I was like, there's some good stuff here. There's some rough stuff. Like Ryan said, the artwork was weird at best. Yeah. A lot of it, but there was some good stuff there. I've enjoyed kind of going back and going through this and getting ready for this podcast.
It's like every band lost their original logo, or at least a lot of them. Like they didn't even have a logo. It's like the art director just bought some weird graphics program in 1995 and was experimenting. It just wasn't good stuff.
Yes.
All right, man. Well, we're going to do 7 because that's about all we could probably muster up out of this age of metal. Nick, why don't you start us off, man, with your number 7?
Okay, so at number 7, I've got Kix's Show Business album. So, That is just a kick-ass record, top to bottom. But in 1995, it had no chance. The critics that did review it totally wrote it off. I mean, it was dead on arrival. But it is just the classic Kix, no frills, AC/DC style rock and roll. It's really good, but it was totally lost, completely lost in the shuffle.
Ryan, what do you think about this one?
Yeah, it's coming up on my list, so I'll hold my comments, but he's nailing everything.
I'm glad you brought this one up. This one, totally forgot about this one, but I remember the thing that stood out for me was that it had a horrible cover. That's what I remember.
Oh, yeah.
Very bad cover. Not a surprise coming from CMC. Ryan, what do you got for 7, man?
Right on. For 7, I got Taiketo doing Strength in Numbers from 1994. I just got to say, the title track, the chorus is identical to Shake and Tumble by Firehouse. You guys gave me... If you don't know it, check it out, and you'll just be like, what the hell? This is a carbon copy. But anyway, I've never been a huge fan of Tyketto, and people preach the crap out of their first album, and I only got kind of halfway on board right off the bat. This is solid hard rock, not too much fluff, but like so many of these bands on CMC, they kind of toned it down. They have horns on one album. I don't do horns in metal. If you really want to get to know Danny Vaughn, I'd just go straight to Wasted Save Your Prayers. That's a good vocal showcase for this dude. It's good stuff. But it's odd that I like that album a lot with him singing, but I'm not a huge fan of Tyketto. So we'll see. Maybe I'll get more into it. I have all their stuff. The album cover's almost there. Snow covers are cool. Look at the back of Long Cold Winter. Yep. It's rare to have snow, and I like it, but they almost nailed it with the wolves on the snow. But they didn't.
I'm so glad you brought this up. I did not realize that Tyketto was ever on CMC. So great, man. I'm going to have to go back and check that out. Never been big into them either, though. So, all right. Well, for me, man, my number 7. On somebody's list, I'm thinking. And honestly, I listened to this today and I kind of feel bad that I put it at 7. I probably should be higher, but this is where I got Warrant, Ultraphobic. And it's okay, first of all, this is the worst album cover out of my whole list. So this wins the award for shittiest album cover. No Warrant, like true Warrant logo, and the artwork is just really, really lame. So I don't know why anybody would want to buy this based on the cover. I remember when this came out, one of my buddies was into this, and I absolutely hated it. Because I'm like, what is the point of this, right? Like, Dog Eat Dog was super good. Obviously, everything before that was great, too. And all of a sudden, like, Warrant is trying real hard to be, like, grunge and alternative. And I'm like, Warrant is done, okay? You're on CMC Records. Make friggin' Cherry Pie Part 2. Because, really, that's what your fans want. Your fans want, like, old school Warrant. They don't want you to be grunge. And I went back, like I said, listen to this today. I will give it. It's got some really good songs. You know, I think Undertow, Family Picnic, and there's a song called Chameleon in the middle of the album, and it sounds pretty much like Untouched. It just sounds like a regular Warrant song. And everybody raves about Stronger Now, which I think is pretty cool. But the thing that drives me crazy is musically, there's just nothing original going on with this. It's a total wannabe of Soundgarden and Alice in Chains and all that kind of stuff. And for me, it just kind of spoils the album. But I don't know, man. I'll go down the line. Ryan, what do you think, Ultraphobic? Is it coming up? You can't talk about it?
Nope. In fact, I got an honorable and an unhonorable list, and Warrant is smack dab at the top.
Of the unhonorable? Nick, any thoughts on Ultraphobic?
Ultraphobic is still to come for me.
Okay, all right. Enough said. Like I said, we're probably going to have a lot of repeats, so everybody's going to have the time to shine with it. All right, Nick. What's 6?
All right, at 6, I've got Dokken, Erase the Slate from 1999. That was the one with Red Beach on guitar. I thought top to bottom it was really solid. It was kind of a return to form for them. No tracks really stood out. It's something I would put on and you know, do laundry or, you know, just kind of just have it in the background. I don't know if there's any killer tracks on it, but like I said, it's just a solid record overall.
Yeah, I agree with you. But you kind of killed the metal vibe when you talked about doing laundry. But we all have to do it, you know, but it's all good. Ryan, you like Erase the Slate?
Oh, I love it. It's coming.
All right. It's coming for me too, man. So I'm gonna refrain. Ryan, what's your 6?
Cool. This is where I got Show Business by Kix.
So, oh, okay. Now you can talk about it.
Yeah, dude. 1995, pretty much what you'd expect from these guys. To me, there's a lot of Dokken similarities in what happened to them. You know, they broke up kind of in the thick of it, disbanded, and then said, you know what, let's get back, guys. This is what we do. I'm a huge fan of Midnight Dynamite and Blow My Fuse, and his voice didn't stray at all on this album. Sounds great, but it is much more blues 70s rock than like the epic Cold Bloods or Get It While It's Hot. So another band that removed all their stuff off Spotify, so I don't know what's up with that, but can't find it.
Yeah, man, these CMC ones are super tough to find on Spotify. There's a few, but I know like that Warrant wasn't on there. So yeah, it's definitely a lot of them are just like either going to get them on YouTube or you've got the original copy at home.
Yeah, exactly. And I realized I supported the crap out of CMC back in the day because I have all this stuff I'm talking about on CD.
All right, man. So my number 6. Had the worst album cover in CMC history, but I'm going to give this album the best album cover that I've ever seen on CMC, and it's Iron Maiden, The X Factor. I thought this cover, first of all, let's just start there with Eddie getting it. He's like, he's all shriveled up and weird, and he's got needles poking into him, but his head's getting ripped off, and you can see his brain. I had a t-shirt of this. It probably grossed a lot of people out, but I thought this album cover was awesome. Now, This happens. This is going to come up a couple times, at least on my list and on yours as well. A big thing that was happening in the 90s is the bands were kind of splitting up, right? The lead vocalist was thinking, I can do better without these guys, and then the band is going to continue on. So to have a style change come in, like grunge, to lose your prominent lead singer, to everything that's going on, it's not a great thing going on commercially, and it doesn't help Iron Maiden. And it's really crazy to think that such a big band like Maiden ended up on CMC Records. So I don't know. It is what it is. I like Blaze Bailey, but I think a lot of the material that they perform just doesn't fit his voice. You know what I mean? So I think, like, if you listen to the song Man on the Edge, it's probably my favorite song on the album. It's perfect. It sounds great. Great song. Everything about it's good. But then you get to other songs. I don't know if you guys ever heard The Sign of the Cross. That's the first song on the album. Later on, when Bruce comes back, he sings that, and they do it live, and it just sounds 100 times better. Like I said, it's just if they did the material, the right kind of material to fit his voice, it's cool. But then other songs, it just didn't work. My biggest gripe with this album is the songs are just way too long. I think there's like, I don't even know which song it is, but there's a song that's 8 minutes, and like by 2 minutes, I'm good.
I know.
And this one's on Spotify. Nick, what do you think, man? You got any love for the X Factor?
That was honorable mention. It was hanging around there. It kind of all blended together to me. After anything without Dickinson, I struggle with it with Maiden.
Yeah, that was a tough. He's a tough guy to replace. It's the same thing with like replacing Jeff Tate or Halford. You know what I mean? It's not easy. Ryan, any love for this album?
You know, I'm kind of like straining to be an Iron Maiden guy as is. I love Bruce Dickinson's Tattooed Millionaire. I love Fear of the Dark. I don't necessarily love the operatic kind of chimey three-part guitars in Maiden in general, but I always have liked Dickinson. So when this came around and I heard it, I thought they're kind of going for like the Paul Di'Anno thing again, it seems like.
A little bit, yeah.
You know, so I wasn't too impressed. And I do not have it on the list. I think I did refresh myself on it, and I thought, nah, this isn't really clicking with me.
Yeah, no, I totally get it. Like I said, I like a few of the songs, but it's not that's kind of what you were getting to. Like, there's a lot of these aren't complete decent albums, and that's kind of what I
referred
to this one. Yeah, for sure. But I love Blaze Bailey on his own. So I feel like the music that he does solo is great, and the music fits perfectly. I just think that maybe they were still trying to perform the same kind of music that Dickinson does, but then try to put his voice. It just didn't work. All right.
Agreed.
Number 5, Nick, what do you got?
All right, number 5, I've got the Taiketto Strength in Numbers album.
Okay, so you got Taiketto.
Nice. I think Ryan pretty much nailed everything, kind of echoed the same feelings I have about it. It's from 94. It's really good. I mean, it's a really good melodic hard rock album that, again, those years, man, that stuff was dead on arrival. I mean, it's just unfortunate because that was really good. I had to go back and kind of get back into it again. And I was like, man, these guys, it's so close. But those years, the 1994 was just, it was just doom, man. There was no chance. But yeah, number five.
You know what? One thing I want to give some of these records, guys, to see if you get your take on it. I like I said, I can't stand most of the album covers. They just look very low buck. A lot of the bands didn't even have videos. Like I said, I think if you go sparingly, you could say like Warrant had like one video or two videos. Priest had one, but not everybody had a video. But anyways, I think the production's not bad. I think overall, I think the production on the Warrant is decent, on the Maiden is decent. I don't think the production was too bad. What do you think?
No, I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they spent some money here. I mean, it, you know, like, it kind of looking forward to this, to recording this episode, I was kind of doing a little research on Tom Lipsky. Yep. And that guy is very well regarded in the music industry. I mean, he has respect for these bands, and there was effort made.
Yep.
So yeah, the production's all there. I mean, it sounds great. Like you said, the timing, the timing is just brutal.
And one thing that happened recently, so I had Jeff Pilsen on the podcast. It was just actually one of the last episodes that I did. And, of course, knowing that we were going to do this episode, I asked about CMC. Because the biggest thing, you know, we talked about it a little bit with the Warrant album, is that, you know, why is Warrant doing grunge? Because at this point, they have to realize it's commercially over. You know, and also Dokken did it with Shadow Life. And he said that CMC actually wanted all these bands to have the true 80s sound, but they also gave them the creative freedom to do whatever they want, which I think might have been a mistake with some of these.
Yeah, you know, I listened to that, dude, and I was thinking, these guys, some of them were still in their late 20s and early 30s, and they were considered dinosaurs. You know what I mean? Like, overnight, they were and it was so sad because, I mean, I speak for myself. I'm 42, and I feel like I haven't lost a step. You know what I mean? And these guys are in their like late 20s, early 30s. Like, that was the prime, and they're sitting there oh shit, I'm a dinosaur. Like, I'm yesterday's news. I got to adapt. And they wanted to make these different albums, man. And it trips me out because they got signed in their prime, and they immediately felt like they were a thing of the past. So what Pilsen said then really resonated, and that was kind of that made me bummed out.
Yeah, for sure, man. Ryan, what do you got for five?
All right, I got a band. I apologize if I'm butchering the name of the band, but Skagerrak, Skagerrak. I don't know if you guys have heard of them.
Nope.
Give a shit about them.
Never heard of them.
Know how to pronounce it or whatever, but because I kind of dig deep into this whole stuff, and I know it. They have a really cool catalog, and they have some really solid 80s albums, so I have gotten to know these guys pretty well. This is their album called Big Time from 1993. And they're a great band. I love their 86 self-titled album. If you really want to get into these guys, check out a song called Move in the Night from their debut album. And you'll get super into these guys, I guarantee. But anyway, this one's a little bit lighter, but it's still really quality hard rock. The song Big Time is a good song, probably the hardest on the album. But I'd compare them like to somewhere between Giant and Nelson.
Hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
I've never heard of these guys. So I think it's great because a lot of these CMC guys were heavy hitters in their day. It's nice to kind of hear about a more rare band that was on the label. That's great.
Exactly. Yeah. I think they're Scandinavian, thus probably explains the name. It probably is pronounced differently, and I'm probably butchering it, but very good stuff. Check out their catalog. Not necessarily this one, but their old stuff.
Nice. All right. My number five.
Take me to hell. I'm God's man.
heavy hitter, Wasp, Helldorado. I think this one came out in like 98 or something like that, toward the end of the 90s. And it's weird, man, because, you know, Wasp, it's funny because you think you know Wasp, but Wasp can kind of go all over the place. And, you know, they did the Crimson Idol where it was more like rock opera. Then they did KFD where they wanted to kind of keep up with Marilyn Manson. And you think by the time they got over to CMC with Helldorado that maybe they would do an album that's for the times. But no, Wasp actually tries to copy AC/DC on this album. So Ryan, I don't know if you know this album. I know you should give it a shot, because the thing. So the first song, Helldorado, I really like. It definitely sounds like old school Wasp. It's something that could be maybe be on The Last Command or something like that. But as you get going, every song is, as a musician, I'm pretty sure it's an A chord. Like they're doing the da 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 da. I swear, you sneak through the CD and you just hear that on almost every song, and it drives me up the wall because I just feel like riffs should be different from song to song. Not, I don't even think AC/DC is blatantly that, you know, similar for every song. And then there's the most goofiest songs ever, like Dirty Balls, Cocaine Cowboys. Okay, so I like it better than KFD because I think a KFD is cool, but they're really trying hard to be modern and be something that they're not. This one, they just go to the complete opposite end of the spectrum and get into all their goofiness, and then to just kind of like play on the AC/DC thing so hard. But I don't know, man. It's got its ups and downs. Not a cohesive album that I can say that I like every song, but I do like some of them. Nick, anything on Helldorado? You got any love for Helldorado?
Yes, I've got love. It did not make the list.
Okay, but you got some love. Okay.
The title track is awesome. I mean, that is classic Wasp. The rest of the record is hit or miss. It's funny you mentioned KFD too, because when that came out, I actually loved that album when it came out. And I was buddies, I'm like Wasp is still relevant and they're great and you got to give them a chance, and all my buddies were like, oh come on, you know, put the Wasp away, and I was like, no. But I haven't gone back and listened to that in probably 20 years so it did not hold up.
It hasn't aged well. No, I didn't mind it either when it came out, but yeah, it hasn't aged well.
No, but yeah, Helldorado, yeah, that's a good record. It was close. It did not make the cut though.
Ryan, this might be right up your alley if you don't know this one. Do you know this one?
You had me at AC/DC. No, I don't know it very well. I don't think I own it. I have heard it. By no means can I comment on it, though. But I'm going to check it out now.
Yeah. I was thinking about, I almost sent you something the other night, but I said, you know what? I'm gonna spring it to him live, and then he can go backtrack and check it out. So.
Oh, thank you. I need more AC/DC.
You got Kix doing AC/DC. You got Waz doing AC/DC. Everybody loves AC/DC. All right. Nick, what do you got for four, buddy?
All right. I'm veering off the road now. I'm going to go a little sideways. So I've got Vixen, Tangerine.
I remember this album. I don't remember anything about it, though. But okay. Hey, please tell me what it's all about, please.
So from 1998, and I did not listen to this when it came out. So I have to admit, this completely went over my head. But kind of going back and listening to some of these albums, I was like, I kind of thought to myself, like, this is, if this would have been on some kind of like post-grunge playlist back then, and it would have mixed right in with everything that was happening. They didn't sound like they were trying too hard. With that Vixen name on it, it just didn't stand a chance again. But it's surprisingly good. This down-tuned, crunchy, just kick-ass post-grungy kind of metal, you know?
Huh. Ryan, you got any experience with Tangerine? Not the fruit, but the album.
I appreciate you putting it on there because I love Vixen. The first two, I absolutely preach, and I'm not a huge female-fronted guy, but the Lee Ahrens and the Lita Ford's okay, and Vixen is probably at the top of my list with female-fronted, and I have neglected this thing, assuming that it was going to be terrible because of the year it came out, but now that you're saying this, I feel like a dick. I'm going to have to go check it out now.
Yeah, yep. You've opened our eyes to this one. Ryan, what do you got for four?
Number four, here's where I got Priest doing Jugulator from 97. Yeah, so I assume it's coming for you guys, or at least one of you.
I got it coming. I got it coming.
But I love it. I think Ripper is absolutely killer. He did a great job. Obviously, I'm a faithful to Halford, but he wasn't into Priest at the time, and the rest of the fellows were. So it's hard shit. I got the Bullet Train cassette single in 97. Like a freebie. Like it was at the music store, like in the grab area. Like you're checking out, you're buying a CD, they go, hey, check this out. Here's a cassette single with the paper sleeve that slides out from the bottom. And I was like, oh shit, this is killer. Bullet Train is awesome.
Yep.
And I loved it. And I'm still bummed that it's not streaming. I know there's a lot of BS surrounding that, but that's another topic. Really cool stuff and a cool album. And guess what? The album cover actually kind of rules.
The album cover does kick ass, yes.
So this is where I got Jugulator.
Nick, you got any love for Jugulator?
Yep, that was also, another honorable mention. That is an awesome record. That was actually nominated for a Grammy, if I remember right.
Wow.
Back then.
You're right.
It's not streaming anywhere. So wow. Yeah, nominated for a Grammy and no streaming.
Okay, man, I'm going to hold my thoughts because it is coming, and I've got actually quite a – shockingly, right? I always have a lot of thoughts. I got a lot of thoughts about that one. But number four, man, this album's really good. It's Saigon Kick, Devil in the Details. And – one thing, okay, horrible artwork. I think it's like an actual piece of art that exists, you know, outside of album art. But it's disgusting looking. Just ugly. It just looks like shit. But anyways, I like Saigon. I did not write down the years. I think this was 95. I could be wrong. But I like Saigon Kick with Jason as the lead singer. I don't know. I mean, I don't have a problem with Matt Kramer either, but I thought Water was really good, and I thought this was a nice continuation. So much great stuff. It's they didn't miss a beat. You know, they didn't try to be anything that they weren't. They already were kind of alternative metal, really, when they first came out. They dabbled in Beatles-y stuff, Jane's Addiction sounds, all kinds of stuff like that. So you got Russian Girl, which is a great song. Killing Ground is pretty heavy. Victoria, Spanish Rain is more of like chilled out, has that kind of Spanish acoustic vibe, and then So Painfully is a cool song. But I'm really into this album, and then when you go back to it, it still sounds really good. So I don't know if either of you guys ever heard this album or care about it. I don't know. Thoughts?
My thoughts are that I don't know anything about it, and I feel bad about that because I really like The Lizard.
Yep.
And I think you educated me on their follow-up album to that a while back, and I really ended up liking it. So, again, just like Tangerine, it's time to do my homework.
You got to check it out. Nick, you know this album?
Yeah, I listened to it. It did not make the cut. I've got The Lizard, and I know for years I've been told that I need to check out other Saigon Kick records, and I have. I just cannot get into it. I'm going to go back and give it a shot, though.
I think this one is more accessible than Water. Water was a little weirder than this one. I think this one's a little bit, even though this one is also weird, it's just a Saigon Kick thing, it's a little bit more straightforward, for sure. All right, we're getting down there now. Okay, Nick, what do you got for me?
So number three, I've actually got the Warrant 86 to 97 live.
Ooh,
record.
Wow, pulling off a live one. Nice.
Yeah, so I thought it's just a fun, it's sloppy, it sounds real, it sounds actually like a real live record. There's not piped in crowd noise and cleaned up. You know, you can hear if they hit a bum note, or if, you know, Janie gets too far away from the mic, and, you know, the vocals cut out here and there. I like the raw, sloppy sound. was recorded at Harpo's in Detroit in 1996. The streaming version, I'll warn you, the streaming version is totally neutered. It's missing a bunch of tracks. But if you have the original CD, it's awesome. It's got cool liner notes, picks from the history of the entire band. It's just a really good, really fun album to put on.
But Ryan, you got to know about this album.
Oh, of course. And I have it, and I really am stoked that you put it on there, because I've been notorious along the podcast history of putting on live albums when it was obvious that there was other studio albums to put on. But I like this a lot. I am guilty of skipping all the non-first three album tracks on this one. So that's my fault, of course. But I'll check it out, and I'll do my research on all the CMC and 90s post Dog Eat Dog warrant and let you know if I'm feeling it.
Nice. All right, man. What is your three then?
My three is Doc and Erase the Slate. Yeah. And, in 99, Reb Beach was a great fit. It was a great addition to any band. The title track is absolutely killer. It's the kiss of death of the opening track world. Change the World kind of rips. Mattis Hatter is getting into that little, it's a little bit too hard in terms of how Winger and Dawkins kind of decided that they would try to be super metal in their 2000s albums when they should have just stuck to the melodic rock. So that was kind of an intro to what's to come. Voice of the Soul is a decent builder.
Love that song.
But yeah, that's a good one. I really like Crazy Mary Goes Round. That's a great song. I love how Mick sings it, and they do the whole thing at the beginning of the song. You sing it, that whole bit. But it's set up Live from the Sun, which may be the last time Dawn sounded killer live.
Yeah.
And I love that album and that home video. So this kind of set it all up. And I remember getting this album when it came out and being really excited to do so. And it really did not let me down whatsoever at the time. So I really preach it.
Nice. It's coming. It's coming. But my number three, now it's my turn to talk about Priest Jugulator. And I think you said you did nail it. This album art is pretty exceptional, especially considering that it's CNC. Another one of those times, man, like we said, we had that singer change. We're going into the 90s, and there's all these challenges, and then now Rob Halford's gone. One thing that I'm going to say is that I think, as much as I love Ripper's voice, I think Halford's sorely missed. Maybe not so much. I mean, okay, whoops, let me be sure. He's good. Well, Halford's great. Don't get me wrong, as a singer. But I think it's his melodies and lyrics, which is really absent, and we need it. Because I don't know about you guys, but to me, I like this album, and it's cool that it's heavy, and it kind of picks up where Painkiller left off, but it's some of the cheesiest lyrics and the most stereotypical metal topics that you could ever talk about, right? We've got talking about abductors, the aliens, a guy on death row, burn in hell, dead meat, you know what I mean? And there's just not those Priest melodies. You listen to Painkiller, it's a heavy album, but it still has great melodies. This album just lacks those kind of great melodies for me. Jugulator is probably one of my favorite songs, and Burn in Hell is really cool too. Don't get me wrong, great songs, but is anybody with me that the strong Halford melodies are what's absent here?
Absolutely. Dude, Halford would, even on Firepower, Halford would bust out something so metal, and then during the bridge become like a pop metal guy again and make it so catchy.
Yep.
And I know that's his influence.
Yes. Yeah.
And it really works really well in Judas Priest, because that's what puts them, that's what makes them stand up alone from all the other wannabe metal bands out there, is they have that little bit of melodic hard rock in there, a little bit of pop metal, and it makes him stand out. So absolutely agree on that one.
Yeah, and I think there's a depth to his lyrics that's missing. You know what I mean? So.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah, I mean, like I said, I had Jugulator close. It was up there, but it's just something was missing, and I think Ryan nailed it. You know, with the without Halford, there is just, there's an element missing in the lyrics. I never really thought about the lyrics before, but yeah, Mike, you're right on the money, man. It's cringy at best.
Yeah, I mean, and don't get me wrong, it's cool, it's metal, it's supposed to be like that, but I mean, guys, we're in 97 now, we're not in 84, you know what I mean? So let's try, like, we can have a little bit of that, but let's try to come up with some more, something that's a little bit more thought-provoking, but I don't know, who knows. All right, we're at number two. Nick, what do you got for number two?
All right, at number two, I've got Slaughter's Revolution record.
Ooh.
So that is a departure, but it's not the typical grunge thing that all these other bands were doing at the time. It's kind of got like a trippy, like a psychedelic retro vibe to it. It is not perfect. I mean, there are a couple songs on here. You talk about cringe. I mean, there are some that are just like, ugh. But the kick-ass tunes are there. And it's different, and I respect these guys for doing something that was sort of left to center at that time. You know, this came out in 1997. Like I said, it felt like it was over, but it was one more chance to try to I don't know, break through a little bit by doing something that was truly different. So I've loved this album since it came out. I bought it the day it came out, and yeah, I love it.
Ryan, what's your thoughts on this album?
Well, I have Slaughter as number two, but it's not this album. But I will say this, because of my age, I started getting Metal Edge magazines in like 95, 96, 97. And I remember this thing being plastered all over the Metal Edge magazines, mm-hmm. and buying it and thinking that I bought a Beatles album by accident. And so I don't have it on my list, and I don't think that I've listened to it since the late 90s, but I'll give it a shot again.
Yeah, I remember getting it and not liking it when I bought it, but same with you. I don't think I've heard it since the 90s, and I did. I think my wife and I went to go see these guys in a club around this time. Club show was great, and they mostly played stuff off the first album, obviously, but I think they had a single, you know, I don't know. I got to go back and check it out and see what it sounds like. But I don't remember much about this album. Just remember not liking it.
Yeah, Ryan, you nailed it with the Metal Edge back then, because that's my time too. I'm 44. And so when, you know, I was still just obsessed with Metal Edge. Jerry Miller loved Slaughter. I mean, no matter what, you know, it'd be Pantera, Marilyn Manson, and then a 3-page article about Slaughter.
Oh yeah, she was faithful, man.
It was great.
She was looking those guys eye to eye. Remember that? She was like 6'2" or something. Like she was looking those guys. She was probably looking down at most of those guys. That's great. Hilarious. She loved that stuff.
Yep, she did. That's awesome, Ryan. What do you got for me?
So here's where I got Fear No Evil by Slaughter.
Ooh, keep them with the Slaughter. I like it. Keep them with the Slaughter going.
Yeah, dude. Perfect segue. But this one came up during one of our 90s episodes, and I said it then and I say it now. This might be my number two favorite, because I like The Wildlife a lot, but like you guys talk about a lot in other episodes, The Wildlife slightly let you down, missed the mark, especially after Sticking To You was so strong. But it's released in 95. It's pretty true to form. Got the original lineup. It lacks the 80s killerness of the debut, but it's close to The Wildlife. Get Used to It absolutely rips.
Yep.
And Out of My Head is one of my favorite Slaughter songs of all time. Except, like I said before, the guitar solo is a absolute ripoff of Def Leppard's Foolin' guitar solo. Like, again, carbon copy. The intro to Divine Order is the Led Zeppelin Battle of Evermore. It's again carbon copy, but there is a little bit of that Beatles stuff to come at times, which brings this album down in my books a little bit. But some of the standouts This thing was written in 93, 94, maybe even dabbling in some 92. So there was some classic Slaughter going on. I would say 70% of the album is good shit. Good old school Slaughter stuff. And the rest of it, they're kind of getting a little too 90s for me.
Mm. Nick, you got any experience with Fear No Evil?
Oh, yeah, I'm a huge Slaughter guy. That's right up there. Back to Reality is really good, too. I mean, both of those records are awesome. The only Slaughter, the only CD I don't think I've put on forever from Slaughter was their live album. Mm. Yeah. Eternal Live record I thought was brutal. I mean, that was that did have the piped in crowd noises and everything, but much beyond that, I mean, I've pretty much loved everything Slaughter's put out.
Hmm. Nice.
I like that one song, Get Used to It, Ryan, because you sent that to me before, but I went back and tried to do this album, and I don't know, man, it's like Stick It To You or nothing. Like, I love that one, and then the rest of them don't do a heck of a lot for me, so I don't know. Maybe there's something wrong with
me. I know, dude. I remember when we did that 90s podcast, you're like, oh, I'll give it a shot because I really want to get into something beyond Vinnie Vincent, Invasion, Stick It To You, and this might be it. But apparently it didn't resonate.
This ain't doing it. I don't know. But number two. I got to Erase the Slate, and I think, I mean, you guys pretty much covered this, but, you know, I really do think they redeemed themselves because Shadow Life was just so bad, and it was so far off the mark, and the album cover, man, I think that's the worst CMC album cover. Just check that one out. This album cover is not much better, but the music is what's saving it, and I think a couple of songs, I think you mentioned a lot of the good ones that I like, but I like Shattered and Change the World. But I also like Voice of the Soul, and of course Erase the Slate is probably the best song on the album. But
yeah.
Probably, like I said, one of the later times where probably the last time Don has sounded really killer, but great release on CMC. Wow. Well, just shows you that this is not the finest era of metal, because we're only about like 40 minutes in and we're almost done. So Nick, what is your number one CMC?
Alright, my number one. Been covered, but I've got to go with Ultraphobic for
nice.
Warrant.
Yeah,
that is my number one. I liked it when it came out. I still listen to it to this day. I mean, it's still in the rotation. I've actually got the cassette. I'm staring at it right now in front of me. 1995, down tuned, crunchy, but it still has the catchy choruses you'd expect from Warrant.
Yep.
It's just top to bottom. It's really good. I mean, it's not great. There are moments where it's kind of cringy, and it sounds like they're trying too hard. But if there was one band that was trying, and it felt like, you know, if their name wasn't Warrant, if there was one band that could have crossed into that, it could have been them. But they just, again, there was just no chance. But the record felt like a natural progression from Dog Eat Dog. Some of the riffs are actually kind of similar, but overall, yeah, that's my number one. That's the one I still go back to this day.
You know, when I listened to it today, it also gave me a little bit of the Motley Crue 94 vibes a little bit, you know, because Motley, I think, was trying kind of the same stuff. It was like they were heavier, a little bit of grungy stuff was kind of getting thrown in there. And then, right, same thing, you wonder if this was called something else, could have done anything, but I think you always would have hit the, oh, it's the guys in Warrant with a different name. You know, it always would have been the guys in Warrant. So it just, there was nowhere to go, but definitely has some good songs, no doubt. All right, Ryan, what's your number one?
Well, my number one is Yngwie, Seventh Sign from 1994.
Nice.
Yeah, dude. Never Die, the intro, made early Yngwie fans absolutely nuts because it sounds exactly like I'll See the Light Tonight. I Don't Know is a blues metal hard. It's hard to label that, but it works. Like, blues metal. Who can pull that off? Well, he can with Becerra, and Becerra absolutely kills it. So, I gotta say, the album cover is absolutely atrocious.
Shit.
And any of the alternate covers were a better choice, and they all suck too.
So,
it's a real shame because this could have been really cool. Like we've talked about before, like Face the Animal, The Seventh Sign, like it writes itself in terms of artwork. It's perfect. But guess what? They botched it. I don't know how. Mm-hmm. So anyway, regardless of the album cover, the material is amazing, and Becerra and Yngwie are a dream team.
Yeah, man. Well, I guess I just need to go because I know Ryan knows this. Nick may not know this, but Yngwie, big Yngwie nut, big Mike Becerra nut, and to have the, you know, to have them together is my number one. I'll tell the story. I've told it before, but you know, back in this era, especially and Yngwie in general, you never really knew much of what was going on with Yngwie because he just wasn't a big thing in the United States. And I'll never forget. I knew this was coming out, but I had no idea who was in the band. I didn't know if Gordon Edmund was still in the band or whatever. So me and my dad would go to CD shops and stuff. I'd buy this. So just random thought. We went to Arby's right after I bought it. So we're having some lunch at Arby's, and I cracked the thing open, right? And I almost died. I'm like, oh, my God, my boy Mike Becerra from Loudness, who I love so much, who I've not heard of in a couple years, is now with Yngwie. I'm like, dude, my mind was blown. And then you think, like, okay, my expectations are, like, super high. Am I going to get home and listen to this and be disappointed? No, because the production is great. The songs are great. It's just everything's happening. I always – don't get me wrong. I like the Goran Edmund albums now, but the problem was is that the Joe Lynn Turner one was so good, and then just something was missing with the Goran Edmund albums, and then I feel like it was right back to the Joe Lynn level with Mike Becerra on there. Just he's a great songwriter and a great lyricist, and to have those guys combined. The song Seventh Sign, Yngwie still plays today, so it just shows you that this was an important album in his career. Great ballad, Forever One. I think Ryan mentioned I Don't Know and Never Die. So the whole thing is great. It really is, no joke, the best CMC album that, in my opinion, that ever got put out, and it's one of Yngwie's best albums that ever got put out. So, yeah, I'm a huge, huge fan of this album. Nick, you like Yngwie? Do you know this album?
I don't know the album, so I'm hit or miss on Yngwie. Mm-hmm. So I'm a guitar player also, and so every interview I see with him, I read it. Every video, I watch it. But when it comes to listening to his albums, I struggle. I really do. The million notes a second, I struggle with it. But the talent, obviously, I respect it. And the guy's a character. I mean, there is nobody like him.
No.
So every interview, I'm right there on top of it. But I do not celebrate his entire catalog.
I don't either. Especially when he's singing lead vocals, I do not celebrate that whatsoever. I turn it off.
I've got to really dig in. I've got to go in with an open mind, and I've really got to try to get more into Yngwie because, like I said, I have a total respect for the guy, and I love listening to him, you know, but listening to his interviews, but I've got to go back and get into records.
Yeah,
dude, not to sit here and preach Metal Mike, even though we should because he's killer.
Yeah,
I'm going to tell you right now, when he did his Yngwie episode rating his albums, it got me back into the 90s catalog, and dude, it opened up my eyes because I was like only a Jeff Scott Soto Yngwie guy and a little bit of Odyssey, and then bam, Eclipse came into my mind, and I checked it out, and I was like, oh, Yngwie from 1990? What could go wrong? And nothing went wrong. And then from then on, I was like, okay, I'm hooked. And then I realized, oh, Becerra sang for him, which I knew because I had all the albums, but I totally neglected. So if you want to get into these guys, you might find that the 90s Yngwie stuff is actually a little bit better than the '80s, dare I say. Mm-hmm. It's just got a little bit more balls, but like, yeah, don't let the album covers fool you. Even like the triangle fit in Yngwie's face in the Seventh Sign. It might be geometrically there, but it doesn't even fit. So like, don't let that fool you.
Well, two things real quick about it. Like, the production of this album is so, like, because we always talk about on the podcast, so, like, we get to the 90s and production is just better. And this is one of those examples. It just sounds heavy and it sounds killer. But, okay, but let me just now go back to the album cover. When you think of the Seventh Sign, okay, basically from what it sounds like to me, it sounds like the end times, the world could be ending because we're doing the wrong things with the environment. That's the vibe that I get from the song. Now, me just telling you that just says that gives you a lot of potential of a cool, like, painted album cover, right? Nah, we're just going to put his face green with a friggin' green triangle on his face. Like, I just,
yeah.
I mean, there was so much potential just based on that song title to come up with a really cool album cover, but he totally botched it, so. What do you guys got for, Nick, was there some honorables that didn't make it? For me, dude, I struggled getting seven. I got no honorables or dishonorables or nothing. So, Nick, what do you got that almost made it?
No, so, I mean, my honorables I've kind of mentioned. I mean, I went through, so I found a list of, I think it was Rate Your Music Top 40 on CMC International that I kind of went through.
Right.
And I kind of bounced around some of these, and honestly, there were more dishonorables, man. There was some, I'm trying to look and trying to remember what some of the ones that were, the Styx album from that Brave New World. If you've never listened to that, give it a chance, and it is brutal. I mean, it kind of sounds like an NSYNC or like a Backstreet Boys. I'm not sure what they were doing. It really is brutal. The Lynyrd Skynyrd albums were bad, and I like Southern Rock, but I will say the Van Zandt album Brother to Brother, that was pretty good. It's kind of got like a country Southern Rock kind of vibe. That was pretty decent. But for the most part, man, it was a struggle.
Yeah. Ryan, you're always a guy with an honorable list. What do you got?
Oh, yeah. Dude, real quick, though, before I start, Van Zandt, if you listen to their 84 album, I don't know if you guys know it or have heard of it, it's like really killer mid-80s melodic hard rock. Check out Van Zandt, self-titled from 84. Very good stuff. But I did check out Brother to Brother or Brothers, whatever it's called. And it's a little bit too southern for me, but I got Dawkins One Live Night. I love
that one. Yes.
Very killer. A band called Stax, STAXX. They kind of missed the mark. They were very 80s. In fact, I'm pretty sure they recorded their shit in like 88 or 89, and then CMC decided to give it a shot, and it's not that killer. Steve Thompson's good, and then I got Accept because I've always wanted to get into Accept because the musicianship is so good, but I've always stopped at Udo's voice and his vocals. Uh-huh. I think he's just beyond. He's like a times 10 of why people don't like Brian Johnson AC/DC. But the musicianship is so good on all their albums. But I got them on there as an honorable, not a dishonorable, because they're very true to form. Do you want my unhonorables now, or do you want me to wait?
Oh, wait a minute. Look, I had one honorable. I do remember now.
All right,
cool. It was Annihilator's Criteria for a Black Widow. It's when they brought their original singer from the first album, Randy Rampage, back. And there's some decent stuff on there. But that's all I got. All right, let's hear the dishonorable. Let's hear it.
Nick, you got any? You want me to get it?
Nah, go ahead.
All right. Well, the biggest letdown I have was Warrant, but my second was Widowmaker, because I absolutely love the first Widowmaker album. I'm not a huge Twisted Sister guy. I like Love Is for Suckers a lot. But I do not like the rest of their catalog. I absolutely adore the first Widowmaker album. I think it's melodic hard rock perfection. This one was polar opposite, 180 degrees different, and I definitely put it in an honorable. Shadow Life was terrible.
Terrible.
And then LA Guns, American Hardcore.
Oh, that shit. Thing, yeah, that's
bad. Yeah.
Dude. I do not understand what they were thinking. I know there was a million lineup changes, but dude, American Hardcore. Let me put it to you this way. I was visiting my buddy at a fraternity in like probably 99 or 2000 at his college, and they had an American Hardcore poster in their fraternity, and they had no idea that these guys were so killer. Electric Gypsy, Never Enough. They had this weird album cover with the dude in the hood and all that.
Yep.
And they probably thought it was so 90s cool. But guess what? I knew the real LA Guns. And this was terrible. So unhonorable to them.
Dude, I never even bought that just based on the cover. Once I saw the cover, I knew it was going to be trash and never bought it, never listened to it. Until recent times, you know, I scanned it on YouTube or something. And I was right. It was trash.
That was another – I remember that – was that the Chris Van Dahl record?
Yes.
That he was on, so that was another Jerry Miller favorite. They got a lot of press, it seemed like, in Metal Edge right around that time. I remember that vividly. I haven't listened to that in years either.
That's, you know, you just can't have LA Guns without Phil Lewis. I'm sorry. It ain't happening. Not in my world.
But have you checked out the Ralph Sands Wasted album?
No. I don't know, maybe, no. but I can't. I'm telling you, no. Phil Lewis or nothing.
Dude, don't get me wrong. You know I love Phil. I'm very, very faithful to Phil. But Ralph Sands is the singer for Steel Panther.
Yes.
And he did that album called Wasted, and it's good, dude. Give it a shot. It's not CMC, but it's good.
I have heard a little bit of it, but yeah, it's just, you know, like I got to have my boy Phil, man.
I'll meet you.
Well, guys, this was fun. Like I said, it's a forgotten period, a dark period. A lot of it you can't stream. So hopefully we'll kind of refresh people's memories, go back and check out some of it, because some of it's pretty damn good. All right, guys. Have a good night.
Have a good night, guys. Thank you.
All right. Take care.
Take care.
Bye.
I hope you enjoyed looking back on that forgotten era of metal. It was fun. Rock on!